The following interview was conducted with Willis Shalio for the Purdue University Oral History Program. It took place on Tuesday, July 11th, 2008 at his residence in West Lafayette. The interviewer is Catherine Marquis, the Oral History Librarian. Welcome. Tell us a little bit about where you were born and your parents and growing up in the early years.
My home was Elkhart, Indiana. My father worked for the New York Central Railroad. My mother was able to stay home with my older sister, older brother, and I. We had cherry trees in our backyard, so that was always a kind of a pleasant experience when the cherries would come on, because we got the privilege of picking the cherries, and my parents then promptly canned them, and they were available then during the winter months for cherry pies and all kinds of good things. After high school, and I had
tell us a little about grade school. Was grade school close
grade
by?
School? Yeah. Grade school was just about four blocks away from where we lived, and had very good experience in grade school. The teachers were very positive about things that you should be thinking about doing, and they encouraged us, and that was a good experience all the way around. In the winter months, we would take our lunches, because they encouraged everyone to just stay for the lunch period and then carry your lunch to school. After graduating from high school, and I had a very good experience in high school, I had excellent teachers, and a chemistry teacher in particular was the one that encouraged me to go on to college. Before that, I had no thoughts about college, but he felt that that would be the thing for me to do. Well, I didn't have any money, and my parents, none of them had ever been to college, so they were not excited about me going to college. But the chemistry teacher encouraged me, and he said, "I tell you what, I think I can help you get a job." And sure enough, he got me a job at a brass company. And so for the next year, I worked for that brass company. I would ride my bicycle. It was about a three-mile trip one way, and carry my lunch. And of course, when you start out with the graveyard shift, and then you work your way. And fortunately, I had a good friend of mine who was working there, and we developed a very good relationship over the years. So I worked for that year, and while I was working, I got hold of the chemistry book that was used at Indiana University. And I, in my basement, where my parents were kind enough to allow me to set up a laboratory, I conducted all the experiments that were normally done in the freshman year of college. So when I arrived at Purdue University, lo and behold, all of the experiments the first year of chemistry were old hat, and I did very, very well in chemistry at Purdue.
Tell us how you decided to come. How did you decide to come to Purdue? Did you come for a visit beforehand?
It was through this chemistry professor that felt that Purdue would be the logical school for me to attend after finishing high school. So that's the way that developed.
What year did you arrive on campus?
Arrived on campus in 1939.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about what campus life was like. student days.
Yeah, what?
Your student days.
Student days. Well, when I arrived on campus, I found a place to live, and it was in the upstairs of a home right across from where the Union is today. And turned out I had a roommate. I had never met this young man before. And lo and behold, he was a musician. And so while I was trying to study, he was tapping his feet and preparing music for one of the shows that where he was going to play. Well, he lasted about 3 months. And there was too much music and not enough Stanford, or not enough Purdue University. And so he flunked out. Well, I had to find some way to earn some money.
Kind of keep your voice this way so it goes under.
And so I met this fellow in one of my classes, and he said, "Hey, I understand that the Kappa Kappa Gamma House is looking for somebody to wait tables." Wow, boy, I was down there in a flash, and fortunately, I was able to find a job there. And for the next 3 years, and that was my source of food and income at the Kappa Kappa Gamma House. That worked out very, very well.
You serve 3 meals a day?
And it depended on, we alternated squeezing the orange juice for breakfast, and then we normally served the lunch and the dinner.
Did they dress for dinner? Did they have to dress for
dinner? Oh, yes.
What about lunch? Did they dress for lunch?
No, lunch was kind of on the fly because they were attending courses. But in the evening, they all dressed, and it was semi-formal. And they had the songs and the singing, and the dinner was very, very well done. A good experience.
What was your major at Purdue?
My interest was in chemistry. And when I came here, I had worked for the full year at this brass company. And so I became interested in metallurgy. So I took courses in metallurgical engineering, from which I graduated. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I had taken ROTC. So I graduated with the right to go to Officer's Candidate School down at Fort Sill, Oklahoma.
Was ROTC required at that time? Did you have to?
ROTC was required. Now there were a few exceptions.
Like what?
If you had a physical problem of some kind. But by far and large, the majority of them were in the ROTC program.
Did that include going to summer camp? Did you go to camp in the summer?
We normally would have gone to summer camp, but of course in the meantime,
the war
had started. And so instead of going to summer camp, when we graduated from Purdue, they sent us to Officer's Candidate School, which was an accelerated program generating second lieutenants. And at the same time that I graduated from the program at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, they were looking for liaison pilots. And the liaison pilots were the substitute for the forward observers. Instead of trying to climb a tree to observe artillery fire, they now wanted you up in an airplane where you could look down on the artillery fire. And physically, I qualified for that program. And then I learned to fly Piper Cubs and Aroncas and all of the other liaison airplanes at the Army Artillery head. So that was a good experience. 3.5 years in the military. We were sent to Germany right at the conclusion of the war in Europe.
1945.
And so it was after the Battle of the Bulge when they called for extra troops. In the meantime, we had been training in California for the invasion of Japan, but they suddenly sent us over to Germany. But we didn't linger very long in Europe because they had other plans for us, and they sent us back to the States for a very short leave, and then out to the West Coast, and off we went to Japan by way of the Philippines.
Did you go by boat?
Oh, yes. Yes, because this, you know, we sent, not only did we take all of our troops, but we took a large number of our supplies and equipment with us.
On the boat.
Or on the ship, that's correct. And we stopped at the Philippines on the way over, and then we ended up in Yokohama. And from there, we moved up the coast to one of the spots that they had reserved for the the military units.
I gather the war was over by that time. You went there after the war?
Oh, yes.
Japan had surrendered?
Yes, Japan had surrendered. And so we were part of the occupation. So for the next 9 months, it was the Army of Occupation. We ended up in a silk mill in a little town called Ueda, U-E-D-A, which was up in the mountains. And our major thrust there was to remove whatever weaponry was found in the vicinity, and it was largely just a matter of small arms and this sort of thing up in the mountains where we were. But our battalion commander would periodically line us up and send us through this warehouse, and we were allowed to take one item each time as we walked through the warehouse. So we ended up with a number of samurai swords and bolts of silk from the silk mill, all of which turned out to be good trading materials. And so that was kind of my experience in the military. And after returning then from Japan, I became interested in further education. So I applied to Stanford University and was accepted.
Okay. Were you married at that time, at this time?
I had married the day of graduation from Purdue. And my wife had a job in Missouri. And so I was able to find my way back and forth there occasionally during my training period. And then she went with me then when we were assigned in California. And that's where she stayed until our first child was born.
So while you went to Europe and then Japan, she stayed in California?
She stayed in California. Mm-hmm. And she worked in various places around in this the little town where we were staying. So after the war is over, and oh, incidentally, my roommate in Japan just happened to be a Stanford graduate. And so he convinced me that Stanford was a place that I
should. Palo Alto was for you, right?
Stanford was a place for me. And so after the war, my wife and I moved there, and she got a part-time job in a women's residence hall, helping there. And while she was doing that, I attended Stanford and got my PhD there.
In metallurgy?
In metallurgical engineering. Mm-hmm. While I was a student at Stanford, and of course the courses were not available in the summertime, so I got a job in a silk, or I'm sorry, not a silk mill, but in a steel mill across the bay. And I would ride my bicycle across the bay and work in the steel mill. Well, of course, if you're the latest employee, you get the job that nobody else wanted, which was the graveyard shift. Well, one night during a graveyard shift, the crane operator apparently got the wrong signal and he dropped something on my foot. Fortunately, I had on steel-toed shoes, but it still damaged my foot, and so that cured my interest in working in the steel mill. And I got a job with Westinghouse Electric, had a plant near Stanford University, and they needed someone to help with x-rays. They were x-raying the castings to determine if there were any cavities or crevices,
defects.
Any defects. So I worked there then for about 2 years while I was finishing my PhD at Stanford University. Upon graduation from Stanford, I was offered a job at the Hanford Works of General Electric Company. It was a classified program, of course, and so we were not told what we were doing, what we were making. We were told how we were going to get it done, but it was all compartmentalized, and so they told you just as much as you needed to know. And then one day, they gathered us together in this large lecture room, and they said, now today we can finally tell you there is today one fewer island than there was yesterday. And that is because they've used this new bomb, using this material that we've been generating here at the Hanford Works. It's kind of interesting. I was given specific assignments there that had to do with the metallurgical aspects of the operation. Fascinating, fascinating project.
Did your wife go with you, or did she stay in California?
She moved with me, but by that time we had two children. And so we had a very nice home, and her mother came with us and helped also with the children. And so it was an interesting experience because everyone there was a stranger until they'd been there for a while, and then everybody took their arms around each other, and it was a kind of a pleasant experience, but it was quite different.
How long were you there?
I was there about 2 years. And then one day, I got a telephone call from an old friend of mine in high school. And this young fellow and I had had interests in high school together, and we'd been buddies. And it turned out that he was now the manager of a company in Elkhart, and he needed somebody to head up an engineering department. Well, I knew nothing about what this was all about, but he felt that he had the job for me and he wanted me to come, and he made me an offer I couldn't refuse. So we closed down our home and the operation in Richland, Washington, and we moved back to Northern Indiana. And for the next 3 years, I worked for the Northern Indiana Brass Company. And NIBCO's function was to make plumbing fittings. And they would take pieces, straight pieces of tubing, and bend them into elbows or make tees for various plumbing situations. And so I was there for a couple of years. And in the meantime, then I was offered a job at Bendix Corporation, which was more technically oriented, and so I decided to go there, and it was with Bendix then for about the next 2 years.
That's in South Bend?
It was Bendix in South Bend. And they were working on various technical problems associated with the rocketry and this sort of thing. And right about that time, Bendix decided that they were not going to major in this kind of activity anymore, so they started to phase out this operation. And I heard about a job at a company called Chicago Telephone Supply in Elkhart. It was CTS, was the abbreviation for the letters. And they had operations in both Elkhart and West Lafayette. I had created some interest with some ideas that I had for some new products while I was with them in Elkhart for a year, and then they wanted me to come to West Lafayette, where they were opening up a brand new plant. And so I came here.
Where was it located?
And it was located, and the building is still there today, out in the industrial park. It's
here on Yeager Road?
That's Yeager, right.
Yeager and Cumberland.
That's correct, at the intersection of those two roads. So then I was with them until they decided that they were no longer going to be in this kind of business. It was associated with products that had to do with very, very latest development. And so the requirements were very strict. And apparently the CTS decided that the income from that kind of program was not what they had in mind because of the risks involved.
Very specific.
That's right. And so Chicago Telephone Supply, the CTS operation in West Lafayette, they decided to close it down.
Was the company here very long?
I think they were here about 5 or 6 years. And when I came, when I came from the Elkhart main plant of CTS to the West Lafayette operation, one of the things they wanted to do is they wanted to develop a relationship between the CTS subsidiary here in West Lafayette and the faculty at Purdue to see if they could generate some sort of interaction and working together that would benefit both parties. And so that was one of my functions while I was here for the 3 years. Was to develop this relationship with the faculty at Purdue, and a number of those came from chemistry. When they finally decided they were going to close then the West Lafayette operation, I contacted some of the people that I had met in chemistry.
At Purdue,
and they said, hey, we think there's a job going to open at Purdue. And so, lo and behold, I found myself working in the Department of Chemistry, and I was there about 3 years.
Okay, what year was this now?
And now we're talking about in the 50s.
What was the nature of the work? What were you doing in the chemistry department?
Well, the nature of the work was something that was... It was quite different than anything I'd ever done before. There, instead of my actually having my hands on some of the work going on, my responsibility was to stimulate the people who were already there and had been in their jobs for many, many years to continue doing the kind of things that the Department of Chemistry wanted.
Training and get them in.
So it was a matter of training and filling spots when they would... Somebody would leave or would move and make sure that the right person got in the right spot.
Okay.
And that was not my cup of tea because I had always been part of the action myself. And now all of a sudden I was not creating anything. I would had to have somebody else do the creating.
Do the hands-on.
Right. And so I found, I received an offer from Purdue in a different activity, and that's associated with the School of Electrical Engineering. And the head of the School of Electrical Engineering came to me and he said, I think I've got a job that you would like to do. In the meantime, now when I left chemistry, I worked for a short time with the co-op program.
The university co-op.
University co-op
program. But the School of Engineering, just their co-op
The Schools program. Of Engineering, and again, you know, my experience in industry was helpful because I had a pretty good idea of what some of the things that were going on in these various industries.
Especially in placement and talking to people about what the job might entail.
Now, part of what that job entailed was to actually visit the students who were working and to see hands-on what they were doing and to encourage them along the way. Okay.
Let me ask you this, but you coordinated the program, but in each of the schools, was there someone also
there was
on site or local?
Okay. Each of the schools had their own coordinator, and my job was to make sure that all of this program worked to the advantage of both the company and the student.
Sure.
And it was a good experience. Uh-huh. It was a good experience.
Had the program been in operation for some time, this co-op?
Oh, the co-op had been in operation for many, many years.
Okay.
It was taking a slightly different shape because of the work situation at the moment, but it was still, the basic idea was you learn right there on the job with the work that company is doing at that time.
Right. It was a combination of going to school and then working on the co-op program, going on co-op.
It worked to the advantage of both the company and the student. In the meantime, the head of electrical engineering came and talked to me about, wouldn't I like to come and help him with an industry-university relation kind of program. And I felt it had merit, and he made me a very good offer. And so I spent the next 3 years then in the School of Electrical Engineering and helped them develop the program that they had with industry. And industries then were more than willing to come to the university and to donate a chunk of money that the university could use in any fashion that they would choose. And it gave them access then to the students that were graduating. And each year then we would have an annual program where the students would present to the people in industry a summary of the research that they had been doing.
Sponsored by the company?
And in some cases it was sponsored by the company, but in many cases it was just an opportunity for the industry to get some idea of the quality of the student and the kind of work that they had done. And if they found that there was mutual interest, then they would have their mutual discussion, and that would later lead to employment. Mm-hmm. So that was a very positive program, and it generated a substantial amount of money for the School of Electrical Engineering.
Okay. Was there any tie-in with the co-op program? Because the co-op worked with industries too, or was this a little bit separate? I mean, would some of the industries probably take some of the co-op students?
Oh yes, it turned out that there were some of the industries in which this was a dual function.
Okay.
But the monetary benefit for the School of Electrical Engineering was very, very positive.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And so that was the program that I was in. There was one final program that I did have some a relationship with, and that is the School of Materials Engineering wanted someone to help with one of the courses. And so my last 2 years with the university, I was doing the co-op program and the relationship to industry, and then I was also teaching with the School of Materials Engineering.
What was the course were you teaching?
And it was a course, and I'm trying to remember the name of the course at the moment, but it was materials engineering.
Sure, okay.
And we covered metals and ceramics and polymers, plastics.
Okay. You noticed that metallurgy, now it's materials engineering, is it not? It changed.
Yes.
The field, of course, has changed, but so has the terminology.
The terminology has changed. I remember when I took my courses originally, we were taking such courses as that had to do with the recovery of gold. Because, of course, one of the professors had a relationship with the gold mining industries. And so he wanted to bring in his particular expertise. And it was fascinating.
I bet.
It was fascinating.
Yeah, right.
The stories that he told about the rough and ready times of the gold fields.
How's the campus changed, campus changed since you've been here? And housing, when you first came here, what was the housing like? Was there a lot of houses or apartments? when you first came?
There were a large number of homes.
When you came on the staff and came here?
There were a large number of these that were available. And as I say, you know, it was a three-bedroom home that I remember, the first place where I lived. And of course, the students all had their desks right alongside of their beds. And so...
this is when you were a student.
Yeah, it was pretty close fit. Now, of course, there were no cooking facilities in these situations. But there were many, many restaurants. I remember where the bookstore currently is, right at the center of campus, used to be a very, very large restaurant.
The university bookstore?
Yes. Yeah.
That's interesting, yeah. Well, when you came to CTS and then came on to Purdue, what was the housing like and whereabouts did you live when you and your wife after you came to Purdue?
Excuse me. I'm going to have to get a drink. Okay. Are we talking about...
The housing, when you came, you worked with CTS, but then you came on as faculty and staff at Purdue. What was the housing like and where did you live when you were working here on one staff?
When it came to CTS, there were numerous homes available, and by that time, of course, I had a family of three children, and so we found a house and bought that, and we lived on Pathway Lane then for the next about 15 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. One of the other things that I wanted to ask, were you ever a faculty fellow at all in any of the... dorms?
I'm trying to remember the faculty person's name at the moment, but through our church, this professor called to my attention the fact that he'd been a faculty fellow and was having an enjoyable experience. And so he developed an interest, and I became a faculty fellow. And attended, and I'm trying to remember now the the exact time frame, but anyway, over a period of about 2 years, I would eat with the students and share activities, and that was a good experience.
What do you remember? Which one building? What dorm were you in?
I was in the one where the small children were.
Oh, Fowler?
At Fowler.
Okay, all right, yeah. That's nice. And they had a lot of activities, the Winter Whispers and dances.
Oh, my.
And
That was a very positive program in my experience.
Yes, right.
Yeah, and incidentally. Yeah. And amongst other things, one of the ladies who was on the staff at this residence hall, turns out, is now living here also.
Very interesting.
So, Will McKay.
Yeah. How has the campus changed over time since you've been here? The campus.
Oh, my. Of course, it's expanded so much. And the all of the brand new buildings and so forth and so on. I think the campus is... of an even more serious note now than as I remember it as a student. Now, maybe it's because I'm no longer associated with the young people that you don't get the feel for that. And that's probably the case. But it's interesting to see now that we have a lady president, and that's as it should be. I had the pleasure of working under a number of staff members that have left an impression on me, and the program has been positive.
It's good, yes, and it, you know. Let's see. Chauncey Village, how's that changed since you've been here?
Huh. Well, it has, it's become more glitzy, but then that's part of what's going on in our world. But I remember the various stores when I first came here, where a student could go in, and for I think it was something like $1.50, you could have a meal. And of course, that was where some of the bookstores are today. There were restaurants there when I was a student back here. In the 40s.
Yeah, interesting. The then there were, of course, the fraternities and sororities, but the residence halls, did they served meals, though, didn't they? Because you were a fat fellow.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But in the earlier years, when you were a student, it was a lot different.
Well, of course, I was, I worked at the Kappa Kappa Gamma House, and so I didn't really have too many activities associated with the residence halls.
Sure, right. Were a lot of the social events in the union, were the dances, that's where they were held, in the union?
Yes. Now, those were big events. Those were very, very well orchestrated, very well monitored, and lots of fun. Lots of fun.
If you were in ROTC, was there an ROTC ball or military
ball? Yes. Yes, but of course, you have to remember that the war began while I was in the ROTC, and so some of those activities were no longer as glitzy as they had been earlier.
When the war came and you were still a student, how did that affect the classes they were running? Did they speed it up or what?
Yes, we were going year-round.
Summers as well?
Summers as well. And that was part of the complication, because some of the courses, one of them that I remember in metallurgical engineering, where we were doing the fire assaying, to determine the gold content of the ores. Of course, they were not excited about operating those hot furnaces in the middle of the summer. And so they had to do some changing in the course assignments and so forth to make everything fit.
You also have done some, written some books on the history of your family ancestry. You make a couple comments on that. And a book on that's in the library, in the French Huguenots, the history of and your family ancestry.
As a boy, I was always curious about my family name. And so I probed my parents, and they then referred me to some of my relatives in Mishawaka. And neither of my parents spoke German. Or if they did, they never spoke it publicly. But when we had our family reunions, which was an annual event, there was always a gathering that would take place that the adults would stay in the home where the reunion was being held. They would be in the parlor, and oftentimes they would speak German. Well, of course, all the young people were outside, and we were playing baseball or something out there. But I remember the German being spoken. So when I was in junior high school, they started promoting the study of Latin. And one of the teachers encouraged me to go that direction, and I've been indebted to that person ever since, because it gave me a great love for the English language. And it's the sources. And of course, then with my relationship with my family in Germany and all, I then found myself becoming interested in other languages. So eventually I ended up learning German and French and some Japanese and then Spanish also. And I developed a real love for the language. And it made it very easy for me then, in later years, when I decided to delve into our family history, because I was up to my elbows in French and German and in dealing with my relatives in Europe. And they related that interest and in turn were willing to open their lives to me. And it provided tremendous dividend over the years. At the time, I didn't realize what was going on, but it was a sense of togetherness that was created by the different languages. And being a student and of interest in the family history, I then went on later and wrote a number of books mm-hmm. about our family.
Did you, have you visited some of the, in France or Germany?
Oh my, yes. Visit all of them. Anyone who would
say that
who would ever say that they were related to me. And I never will forget meeting this gentleman in France. And when I saw him, he had some of the same features of my father. That was
an eye-opener.
Sobering experience.
I would imagine. That's right.
I must say that once I was able to tackle their language, that these people opened their arms, and
they felt comfortable talking in
yes,
their native.
Yes, and it was a very, very warm experience.
Yes, that's right. Let's talk retirement activities. What have you been doing since you retired from Purdue? Can you share anything with us?
Well, since I retired from Purdue, I've been tackling more and more of my genealogy, and I've ended up writing something like 3 books on the subject and visiting Europe and having a tremendous relationship. It's been very, very gratifying. The investment was well worth the time.
Good.
Yeah.
And keep in touch.
Yes.
That's very good. Okay.
Yeah, we are in touch now with on the internet.
Which is nice, a little easier. And quicker, right? And cost saving. Do you have a fond, if I ask you, do you have a fond memory of Purdue? Something that comes to your mind? Fondest memory of Purdue?
Wow.
The tradition?
The fondest memory.
Yeah, or a fond memory.
Well, of course, you know, having raised my family here, I've had very close relationship with each of them. Fond memories. I think one of the fond memories I have was attending the various shows with my family at the Union. I'm sorry, at the music hall. And when my wife and I were active here, we regularly attended all of the musical productions.
There were quite a few.
And over the years, there were many.
Right, exactly.
Never had a bad one.
Yeah. Even Bob Hope was here one time. They used to have the Victory Varieties.
Oh, yes.
Great shows on Friday and Saturday night of home football games. I went to a few of those, and my brother-in-law and sister were here a couple of times, so it was nice.
And you mentioned football. We just happened to have an interest in that also.
Very good.
And my wife and I attended many of the games.
It's colorful. I'm going to ask you one final thing. Do you have an outstanding event in your life that you'd care to share with us?
Well, the outstanding event in my life was when, during the war, when I was observing artillery fire.
From the plane?
I'm in my airplane observing artillery fire with an observer. When all of a sudden I see a little puff of white smoke off in the distance. And that tells me immediately that someone is trying to shoot me down. Now the problem is that once you're in the air and you take on the observation of the artillery fire, you have a responsibility to stay in the air. And that was a very, very difficult time to decide to stay in the air so that the observer could observe artillery fire. And so it was a matter of second guessing which way the next burst was going to occur in the air. And so it was a kind of a guessing game between the Germans who were trying to shoot us down and me up there trying to keep that airplane there while we could observe artillery fire. That was very difficult, very difficult.
I would imagine, yes, I would imagine. Any questions that you'd like to ask that were not asked, and any closing comments?
I guess there's one closing comment that I didn't mention anything about the trip over by ship. As we entered the English Channel, they started to drop the depth charges. And of course, this was a brand new experience. And we, of course, were immediately advised as to what was going on. But that was a period when you wondered if you were going to survive.
Right. Yes. Okay. Any other summary or closing comments you'd like to share with us for the researchers that you care to make?
I would only like to say that, you know, that my experience with Purdue have been positive. And it was a great learning experience as a student, and it was a great teaching experience as a teacher.
Very good. Thank you, Professor Shalio. Appreciate that. This closes the interview. Thank you.